This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Caller number 10 at 800-636-1067. Congrats, you are winning two tickets to see Joe Coy, Just Being Coy Tour. Saturday, February 22nd at Capital One Arena, coming up 4 days from now. For tickets and more event information, please go to thefandc.com/contests. We are giving these tickets away every single day this week right here at 4 o'clock.
I like that name for the tour. I also might have gone with the Koi Pond, but either way, it works. I want to remind you, the show is exclusively sponsored by the law firm of Condori and Morab. Estate planning, elder law, real estate transactions, probate administration. Their attorneys are always there to protect you and your family's assets. Schedule a free consultation with their team today by visiting kmlawyers.com. Be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
It is time for our Beltway Blitz. We'll spin you through the teams you care the most about. So let's get started on the gridiron. Danny, we have not addressed this yet, so let's start right here on the show. The Commanders have hired the grandson of John Madden. You heard this in Earl's update a few moments ago. Jesse Madden to their staff. He will be on the quality control department on offense. He recently graduated from the University of Michigan, wants to get into coaching. Quality control, I mean, it's basically whatever you make it, right? You can have him do assignments where he's researching and looking things up. They got a big enough R&D department that it might be different things. But I remember back when I was covering training camp, you might have these guys label your videotapes. Like, there's all kinds of different responsibilities, but it is an opportunity to get his foot in the door for the grandson of John Madden, who gave so much to the NFL. Pretty cool.
That is neat. Yeah, I like that. So I will just say, if this was Jesse Rouye, we wouldn't really care all that much. It's as low a level position as you can have. But it's neat because of that, the link that you mentioned. But also, here's the part about it that I like the most. He was part of the Michigan's 2024 national championship team. This is a young, up-and-coming mind that you don't just hire a dude just because he's like, hey, my granddad was a big-time coach. You guys ever heard of him? No. You hire the guy because he's sharp. You hire the guy because he's thoughtful and you think he can be something at some point. I mean, that to me is the part that I like.
I
like that. I like the young mind that, you know, had success, clearly wasn't, you know, NFL player caliber type stuff. A lot of those guys running around, by the way. Let's capitalize on it.
So I think you hired the guy because he's John Madden's grandson, to be honest with you. It's a nice bonus that he was a defensive back who switched over from playing quarterback as a freshman at the University of Michigan. But there's a lot of those guys, you know, that just played DB at schools. I mean, this past year obviously wasn't all that great for Michigan, but you know, 2 years ago certainly was amazing. Was on the team that won the national championship. But there's players like that floating all over the place, and I have no issue with this, right? I mean, we talk about whether it's Bronny and LeBron. Like, this is not that. This is you're about to earn your way up. This would be the equivalent of if Bronny got like a job in the, you know, basketball analytics department for the Lakers or whatever. This is not getting 4 minutes a night for Los Angeles. But I think this is cool, and there are so many people that grow up around the sport, Danny. Bloodlines can be really helpful and can matter You know, Sean McVay is a third generation, and his grandfather was heavily involved in football, obviously. I don't need to go through all the families in football, but we've all seen it. Does it help you get your foot in the door? Yeah, but now either you work your butt off and you impress and you continue to climb the ladder, or if you don't, trust me, you're not going to keep getting opportunities if you don't do the right things and show people that you're good.
I smell what you're cooking there. I mean, to me, ultimately, you're right. I mean, the name gets you in, but you know what you do with it, of course, is the most important. For people that kind of rolled their eyes and groused about someone like Kyle Shanahan, who I think you referenced. Well, you know, without Kyle, or excuse me, without Mike there to watch over him on Gary Kubiak's staff, he took a Steve Slayton-led Houston offense and had him top five in the sport a couple times. The offensive bona fides are there. Now we don't think about it. But at the time, getting your foot in the door, yeah, if he's Kyle Stevenson, maybe he doesn't. But once you're there, this is a results business.
Well, and there's always people that are blinded to by your name negatively. Like the amount of hours I spent talking to people on the phones who hated Kyle Shanahan's guts and thought he only had a job because of his dad that don't know what they're talking about. And they don't know ball. They're out there too.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, guys that are the sons of players have it difficult at times because the expectations are louder and higher. You can't just blend in and be, you know, part of it. Now, I think they would take that trade because of the opportunities that come with it. But I think to this day, Kyle Shanahan probably gets more flack and more heat than if his name was, you know, Kyle Paulson with his same exact resume. From people that'll just never see him as anything other than a guy that got in because his dad was Mike Shanahan. Marty Herney is no longer with the Commanders. One of the founding members, Danny, of the Marty Party is no longer a part of the organization. Ben Standig pointed this out, I think, first this weekend that he noticed he was no longer on the website. He was, of course, their highest-ranking official, essentially, not named Ron Rivera, a couple years ago, part of the front office staff with the terrible draft history during the Rivera era. And then this last year was not really involved at all, was an advisor to the team in air quotes who worked from afar. I don't know how much advising he did. They basically just didn't want to pay him not to work.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they had him file a report or two over the course of the year. Frankly, I doubt it. But Martin Mayhew knew Adam Peters pretty well. They had a relationship. Again, this is how the league works. Yeah. It's not just being the grandson of John Madden. So Martin Mayhew stayed here, whereas if they hired a GM he didn't know, he probably would have been blown out pretty quickly or gotten the Marty Herney treatment and told to go somewhere else. But they kept Martin Mayhew around, who's still with the team, who's going to be with the team moving forward. But Herney is out, and his exit is probably not going to lead to any tears being shed.
Yeah, I mean, this is example number 1 trillion, not that anybody was comparing, about why this ownership group, why this front office, they're just better than me. And here's what I mean. I still kind of want my pound of flesh. Like, anybody that was up there nodding and smiling when Ron Rivera was speaking in platitudes and saying nonsense, everyone that was like, you know what? I think it is Forbes. Let's go with it. I want everyone involved to be out on their butt. And I've wanted it for a long time. I wanted my pound of flesh as soon as, like, you know, with a couple of games left, when everyone knew that Ron was going to go. And you know, just come on. Show me that you know that this is bad. They know. They're plenty smart enough. And they're treating people with class and decorum. And they're much less vindictive than I would be in that situation. I would say, you are not welcome here. Like, you seem like a very nice man. Good luck to you. Part of it, maybe not even your fault. I don't care. I associate you with so much ineptitude, you can't be around.
Which is not how business should work or decisions
totally. Exactly
should be
right.
made. And you joke about this, but truly, like, you can't be a GM and think or act
exactly.
that way.
I know.
And it's why you wouldn't be one, I guess, if you're going to operate
totally.
That way. But that having been said, you just referenced something I wanted to go back to really quickly. You talked about if you were there when they took Emmanuel Forbes. I'm sure you saw, I think it was JP Finley from B. Mitch and Finley, put something out about how there was like a shouting match. And this was all over the place a week or so ago when they took Forbes. I actually want to ask him about this, and I'll have to remember next time he's in to bring this up, or maybe we can get him on. But we saw the videos of that. Nobody was shouting at anyone. Remember we had the behind-the-scenes, like,
yeah.
Watching the draft room documentary that came out? They were all – Ron Rivera was driving to the facility saying, I hope we get Emmanuel Forbes. And then you got to see Stokes and Mayhew and Herney all kind of talking about how they wanted him. Well, if someone else is shouting, who were they? Because they don't matter that much. That was the whole group. We saw all of them.
Yeah,
in
we
on
saw
that
the brain
pick.
Trust each other.
Unless they had already had their shouting match.
Mm-hmm.
And now for the documentary, they just all pretended to love the pick. We literally saw them all in unison excited about Emmanuel Forbes. So I don't know when that shouting match would have happened.
But I'm intrigued. It's one of those.
To me, that feels like a
CYA
years later,
after the fact, yeah.
Oh, now Marty Mayhew was shouting at people. What about this video I've got of you talking about how much you love him and that they should pick him?
You know who I loved all along was the guy we didn't take who played a lot better and is not cut by his team.
Just not quite buying that. All right, let's get to the Myles Garrett update from this weekend. The Commanders have become the betting favorites to land Myles Garrett. They are 3-1, plus 300. Favorites to land Garrett. After them, the Eagles at plus 450. By the way, that would stink.
Yep.
They don't need any more pass rushers or great defensive players. The Bills, plus 550. The Lions, plus 650. By the way, him staying at the Browns, about 5-1. So, according to odds makers, there's a better chance he ends up rushing the quarterback for Washington than that he ends up staying with the Browns, which I disagree with.
Yeah, it makes such practical sense if you're looking at it from the outside in going, well, they need elite. They're picking at the end of the first round. You got to figure out a way to get one of these guys at a premium position. Here we go. Let's saddle up. From the from a different perspective, it might be we got to do it so Philadelphia doesn't, right? We got to figure out a way to compete with them directly. So that's another kind of angle to it as well. I just don't know. I wonder deep down, is this front office going, no, I know you guys want the splashy thing. We're not doing splashy. Or let's throw out the plan and go big.
Let's talk baseball. Beltway blitzing in-house today on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. Nats lefty Shinosuke Ogasawara got a preview of Major League Baseball hitters on Monday. This was yesterday, throwing to live hitters for the first time in spring training. My expectations for him are low. There wasn't a big market to acquire him, which I think is somewhat telling. He's a lefty. He doesn't throw that hard. But I do think it is a huge deal that the Nats finally signed a player from
100%,
Japan.
100%.
This has to be a story. They have just neglected this. They have kind of refused to engage in the market, and they finally did. This gives me hope, not that they'll actually spend any real money, but that maybe it's another avenue to get some players like Ogasawara moving forward.
Absolutely. And that's to me more significant than the actual player himself. Because, I think maybe he starts in AAA to stretch out a little bit, kind of get used to paying or pitching every fifth day. Maybe he's a swing guy in the bullpen and they work him along that way. It's an adjustment because those guys, I think in the Japanese, like I think they throw every 6 or 7 days. This is obviously a different schedule here with Major League Baseball. So he's not a as high a profile guy as some of the dudes that are fetching these $100 million posting fees and the like. The significance is more that they actually dip their toe into that marketplace for the first time.
And possibly he'll help them.
Right.
Whether it's out of the bullpen, supposedly they told me it was going to be in the rotation. This is one of those things where like 15 people are showing up for a party where only 5 can stay with a ticket where they all say, they told me I was invited to the party because they told pretty much all 3 of their veteran additions that are arms. Trevor Williams, he was going to be back in the rotation. Mike Soroka, apparently Ogasawara as well. And that means that a couple of your kids might not make the rotation, which I hope isn't the case. But I'll slot him in the bullpen, see if he can kind of find his way as a long reliever. Also over the weekend, the Nationals made a move. Paul DeJong, who hit 24 home runs last year, infielder, no longer really an everyday player, but a guy who played on multiple teams last season. I think he's been on 5 teams in the last 2 or 3 years.
Feels that
now.
Way. Like, fill in the blank team has signed Paul DeJong right around this time.
1 year, $1 million. So it tells you not a huge market for him. But they had 0 players with more than 20 home runs on their team last year.
Yeah.
He hit 24. So he's got a little bit of pop off the bench. I bet you he starts more games at third than we want him to.
That's a great way to put it. We're going to see more Paul DeJong than we signed up for.
He's going to spell C.J. Abrams at short, where he's pretty good defensively. He's probably going to play some second base for Luis García. But I'll bet you maybe he's not splitting time, but I'll bet you he's playing a couple of days a week at third base right away.
Yeah, he was a 30-homer bat in 2019, but, I think those days are long gone. But you touched on it. 24 bombs across a couple of teams getting at-bats every day. He can do that for a second-division club, right? And I think you may see that.
Josiah Gray threw 60 feet in his Tommy John surgery rehab, which is one of those mile markers that you need. I mean, if he throws this season, it'll be at the very end of the year, just ramping it back up. It's going to be a lost season for him on the field. But former All-Star, important player in the organization, rehab seeming
good
to go
too.
Pretty well. And, a guy that we root for because he's been a great guest of ours over the years. But at least good to hear that the early part of his rehab is on track and going pretty well.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that you dread the most are the setbacks in this kind of deal, right? As long as you're adding, as long as you're doing a little bit more each time, there's no rush, kind of as you said, it's not like you're sprinting back for a playoff push or something to that effect. Just the timing of it is unfortunate. It's a lost season either way. The thing that you dread the most is that sort of, hey, he felt a bit of discomfort when he expanded to throwing from 100 feet or whatever, and now you kind of restart that clock, and then they kind of go into the ether.
Let's talk hockey. Did you see that there's going to be a statue paying homage to Alex Ovechkin and the boys in that Georgetown fountain that they'd been celebrating in?
Oh, it's cool.
Have you seen this?
I didn't know. I didn't see that.
Yeah, so they're putting together a little celebration. The Capitals have announced that basically they are honoring Ovi and Oshi and the guys that jumped into the fountain to celebrate the Stanley Cup. On this little mini break here as we wait for the Four Nations title.
That's pretty neat. I like that a lot. Yeah, it's not your normal thing that you'd commemorate, but that wasn't normal. You know what I mean? It turned into the almost what they were known for, as just as much as winning the thing is how they basked in it.
A special permanent plaque, they're calling it, in commemoration of the 2018 Stanley Cup Championship celebration. It's at the Washington Harbor Fountain in Georgetown. And in fact, 3 days from now, I believe, is when they are going to make it official and have some type
That's
of
cool.
event the Caps are going to be a part of. But you know the fountain, right? You guys have all walked past it right there on the Georgetown waterfront. You can picture Ovi, Oshi, Wilson, Holtby all got into the water and kind of flailed around. Mostly it was a lot of Ovi and Oshi. But Willie, I remember in the, how could you forget, the white T-shirt Tom Wilson swimming around in those waters.
So funny. So good.
But it's been 7 years since then coming up this summer, and the Capitals going to commemorate it with Georgetown with a plaque right there, which I think is awesome.
I think it's awesome, too. By the way, it doesn't feel like it was that long, but you're 100% correct. It was. Now, think about all the different things that have happened since then, good, bad, or otherwise.
Sports-wise? Or
I was actually thinking sports-wise, but yeah. You also referenced that's saying, a good point.
There's some things in life I could think about that haven't been awesome since then.
That's true. You know? Yeah.
7 years. And that's also just a lot of time, if we're being honest. I mean, that's 20% of my life since that time. Kind of crazy to think about.
Yeah.
You know?
That's right. God,
that's not that fun.
That's gross.
He's Danny. I'm Grant. You're listening to The Fan. Where do the Commanders rank among NFL teams as far as how many of their starters were drafted internally in the first two rounds? We'll get into that next.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Allo, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Allo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
true crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme. From serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're locked into Grant and Danny on the Fan. Welcome back. Thank you for making the show part of your day. We're with you for another couple of hours, taking you up to 6:30 this evening. And then overtime, live and local, right here on the Fan. So I saw this tweet making the rounds today. May have been from Riggo's Rag, but I saw this making the social media trek through my feed. And I thought this was interesting to bring up. So, Danny, each NFL team's percentage of first and second round picks that are starters on the team that drafted them, which is convoluted, but let me explain. Basically, how many of your team's starters did you draft in the top two rounds? That's the exercise. And then we ranked every team in the NFL from top to bottom, 1 to 32. This makes what Washington just did so much more amazing.
Doesn't it?
The Commanders, as you'd expect, are not going to be in the top five on a list like this. Not when your recent first and second round picks are almost exclusively not on your team.
Not on the team.
You wouldn't expect that they'd be in the top 10 or even the top 15. So this is going to be a back half the league thing. Start thinking maybe you're in the low, you know, mid 20s, something like that. They are dead last in this number in the NFL. 36% of their starters, so about a third of them, are players that were drafted in the first or second round in Washington, which is not to say Rivera drafted them. That also counts the guys that Peters just drafted.
Mm-hmm.
That counts the guys from before Rivera got here. But only the Raiders at 38%, another perennial loser in the AFC West, are sub 40%. Washington is dead last. And it's got to be noted, I would say, Danny, that it's not like they've been picking at the bottom of the round like they are going to this year.
Exactly right.
They just got to their first championship game in 30-plus years. They normally pick in the top five or in the top 10 or certainly in the top half of the first round. A good year meant you picked in the 16 to 23 range because you just made the playoffs and lost in the first round. This year, they're picking at 29 in the first 32 and then at 61 in the second round that goes through 64, right at the end of the round. But that is so abnormal for them. They are the worst in the league in terms of turning first and second round picks into starters, which should have been a death sentence, but Adam Peters and Jaden Daniels made it okay.
So a couple notes on this, because I found this fascinating. I used to do a thing on my own, is I would go through every playoff team and count among their starters how many guys were drafted. In other words, like every team that was good used to have a percentage, they'd be around 15, 16, 17 out of 22. And these are always rough numbers, and you'd supplement via free agency, but the game's kind of changed. There's not much correlation with first and second round as starters for you and winning. The Bears were first in the league at 91%, for example. Now, number two is the Eagles. We'd like to be them. But New Orleans was number three at 80%, and they're a disaster. Part of that's because they, you know, couldn't afford anything for the salary cap. But so people that have pointed that out and kind of rolled their eyes and said, yeah, well, there's no correlation with that and winning. Here's my counter to it. There's only a couple of three or four teams, in fact, that are sub 50%. It just means that you missed so badly here over the last several years that you've had to go elsewhere, right? And you can get away with it for a short amount of time. Minnesota won 14 games this year doing it this way. They're at 40%. San Francisco has been really, really good.
Sometimes it's by design, too.
Of course,
like, you know, they're the bleep those picks organizations or whatever, like the Rams, who are
right at
27th 50. Or whatever,
yeah.
Where half the time their starter was a first or second round pick. They're just as happy trading for a guy or signing a guy, but Washington wasn't purposefully doing it
that way. And that's my point, is this was not the design. If your design was to do what the Rams had done, you didn't. The design was to be we're going to draft and develop our guys, build through the draft, be patient, low-hanging fruit in free agency. We're not going to go get the Hall of Famer. We're going to go get Cody Barton. We're not going to go get, another superstar. We're going to do Cleveland Farrell. They were trying to build this way and failed so miserably. It lets you know they should have been in the company of the Raiders. They should be right down there. Sorry, it's Peters, it's Jaden Daniels. And company. That's what happened.
And yeah, there's no one-to-one where you can definitively draw some kind of conclusion and say, well, if you're better with your first and second round picks becoming starters, you're going to be a better team. But until Jaden Daniels, I would say Washington, the Raiders, you know, the Dolphins, the Panthers, the Cardinals, the Jets, some of the teams in the bottom 10, what do those teams ever win?
Mm-hmm.
Whereas you could go through and pick some of the teams out of the top 10. I mean, the Bears have had their problems, coaches and otherwise coming through there. But the Eagles, you know, the Saints are competitive year in and year out in a bad cap situation. The Steelers make the playoffs every year. The Bucs are the only team other than the Chiefs, I think, to be in the playoffs five straight years. The Colts are a pretty good organization. Now they can't figure out quarterback, and it's held them back. But I would say I would rather be just pick a random team out of the top 10 of this chart than the bottom 10. I'd rather be that organization. So it might not be exact, but I think the chart still speaks to you got a better chance to be pretty good. They kind of do, you know, 16 on the left, 16 on the right for the 32. I'd rather be on the left than the right.
Agreed.
You know, I think what you would see bear out is that on average, the teams on the left probably have a little more success. But you're right. It's not perfect because we don't know what the philosophy was.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. The Chiefs, as an example, are 22nd at 58%. They might have said, hey, we don't really need a bunch of starters out of this class. Let's move these picks and spend big money at tackle because that's the one need that we have. And so you're working back from every team kind of having a different paradigm anyway.
And that's what's essential to me, right, is this list is just another way to quantify how miraculous this whole thing was this year and this ride this year. Because, again, the what they should have been is a team with a first year of a new regime where you're power washing away the old guys. You're getting rid of the Jamin Davises, the Emmanuel Forbeses, the guys that couldn't get right or couldn't get along with the new program, figuring out who you're going to keep, et cetera. Bring in a couple of vets. Yeah, let's win six or seven games and get some nice experience for the kid. Talking about the quarterback. Sorry. We jumped past those expectations in a major way.
I also don't know if this chart was trying to elucidate anything. Like, did they just list this so we had those numbers? Or were they trying to say that there's some type of causation or correlation?
That I don't know, because I only saw the tweet posted with hey, look at this information. And I think any fan base can sort of take out what they want, where you would go, look at Tampa, for example. An under-the-radar, to your point, a whisper-quiet organization. They've done a really good job in this regard, right?
10 teams are over 70%.
Mm-hmm.
2 are over 90%. 5 are over 80%. Washington's at 36%. I mean, that's just kind of my point is I don't need it to, you know, explain anything else. This should have been an utter death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
The amount of first and second round picks just this year that they ripped off of the roster and gutted because of how bad the drafts were under Ron Rivera. Staggering.
Yeah, you can count them on one hand. First and second round picks. Daniels and Cosme on offense, right? Stop me when you get to a first or second round pick. McLaurin, third. Robinson, no. Zacchaeus, no. Dalmy Brown, third. Zach Ertz, Brandon Coleman, third. Allegretti, Biotish, Cosme already mentioned, Wiley. Two guys on offense. Two.
And by the way, we're talking first or second with the team they're currently on.
Yeah. Cleveland Farrell, no. Daron Payne, yes, that's three total. John Allen, yes, that's four total. Torrence Armstrong, Frank Aluvu, Bobby Wagner, Dante Fowler, Benjamin St. Juice, third rounder. Jeremy Chinn, no. Quan Martin, yes, that's five. Lattimore, no. Sanders still, yes, that's six.
How about Quan Martin?
Snuck in there with the second
just
round pick.
Just hanging around.
Yeah, there you go.
Turning himself into a good little ball player in year two.
And counting Mikey Sanders still as the nickel, so that's now your kind of base. So, yeah, that's six out of, you know, the 22 plus a couple, because the way starter is now is a little bit more nebulous.
This is the area, folks, where this team's got to figure it out and get better. And they will, because they have a different group in here at this point. And you just saw last year that their first round pick was Jaden Daniels. But they had 3 second rounders, and it's not like they put on a clinic necessarily yet. I mean, there's a lot TBD on Johnny Newton at 36. I love the player. I loved the pick. I still think he's going to be awesome. Mike Sandra still looks like a win already.
Yes.
He played at a level that makes you think he's going to be a tremendous DB for a long, long time, inside, outside, versatility, the ability to be multiple, a lot to like there. But, I mean, one of their second-round picks was Ben Sinnott. I like the pick. I like the player fine. That was a complete dud of a first season for a second-round pick.
Yeah.
I'm not saying he's a dud. I'm not saying the pick was a dud. I'm saying the amount of usage and production that you got out of him where you took him, which I believe was 53 overall.
53rd overall.
Is a really, really bad start in terms of blind ROI.
So here's what I wonder. Truth serum, deepest, darkest places. You and Adam Peters are hanging out. You've had a couple of cocktails and everybody's, you know, their feet are up and we're just having a good old time. I wonder deep down, would they go back and do that exact same thing again? And here's where I'm going. Again, I'm not criticizing Ben Sinnott.
How could they?
We're taking this with the future in mind, right? A guy that's going to turn into our Kyle Juszczyk or turn into our Kittle or whatever. If they'd known, we're going to be pretty good right now this minute and have a chance to go into the postseason. We're going to make some noise and win 12 games. Would they have maybe gotten a more immediate impact guy there probably? And I think the answer is probably yes.
I would hope so. But even still, like even if they don't want to shift their paradigm based on this season, you've boxed yourself in a little bit at tight end if you bring Ertz back because you've already drafted Sinnott. To where if you brought Ertz back, Sinnott could be someone that you go get outside the building who's less like Ertz. Maybe he was more a little dynamic or versatile down the field. I don't want to pretend like Sinnott's preseason didn't happen because I thought that that was really exciting. Watching him rumble and break tackles, he looked like a real playmaker in the league. If not for those two exhibition games that I'm remembering, I probably would not think anything right now of the prospect.
Mm-hmm.
But those happened, and I saw them, and I thought, This guy can play in the league. So I'm still hopeful. But yeah, I would think it would be weird if they wouldn't take someone else with that pick based on the fact that they just decided in an NFC championship game and all the games that led up to it, this guy can't help us on offense. He actually, interestingly enough, made the biggest play of the NFC title game with the fake punt catch.
With the fake punt, yeah.
From Tress Way. But offensively, they essentially said, now we're good to him all season long. So I would hope they would do something a little bit different. But this could actually be a good opportunity for the first time today to open up the phones on the Commanders. And we can open up the MGM National Harbor listener lines on this at 800-636-1067. We're talking about first and second round success, right? And the Commanders have the fewest, by far, number of players, them and the Raiders, basically, in the NFL that were drafted by Washington in the top two rounds that are still starters on the team. The second round last year, everyone feels great about Daniels, first round, number two overall. I got it, as well we should. But they took three guys in round two.
Mm-hmm.
Newton was okay with huge upside. Sandra still, I think, looks like a win, was very good. And then Sinnott, who was a disappointment with upside. How do you feel about that trio moving forward, and how sure are you that it ends up looking really good on the back end, that they got long-term starters in all three of those players? 800-636-1067 is the number if you want to join us on Grant and Danny here on The Fan. The lowest percentage of a team's starters that the club drafted in the first two rounds belongs to the Commanders. And I shouldn't laugh because it's not surprising. I mean, this is what happens when you go an entire regime not hitting on draft picks, which is what happened thanks to Ron Rivera, the Marty Party, and that group. But Danny, in a league where there's two teams where over 90%+ of their starters were drafted in the top couple rounds internally, where close to 10 teams have 80% or higher of their starters drafted in the top two rounds internally, Washington had to make up last year en route to the NFC title game for sub 40%, barely over a third of its players drafted in the first two rounds make up their starters.
Yeah, it's why when they go shopping, it's like, let's go to the bargain DVD bin and find veteran for 1 year, small amount of money, short-term deal for a little bit of money, reclamation projects. And listen, they turned a profit on almost all those guys. Their shooting percentage in there was incredible. Again, I'm going to keep saying this till I'm blue in the face. Dante Fowler made less money than Tressway, and they got 10.5 sacks out of that. That's ridiculous return on investment. So that's what they had to do because they had so many gaping truck-sized holes in their roster.
You don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Now, the good thing they did, too, is I think the lesson I learned a little bit in their offseason, just throw as much crap at the wall as possible. Like the amount of one-year mini contracts that they signed. If you have seven of those one-year deals with guys like Fowler, a couple of them are going to work out. You know what I mean? The batting average, even if it's not great, says, I'm going to sign Michael Davis and a couple of the other DBs I've already forgotten that were at training camp. Because you know what's going to happen is I'm going to find Noah Igbinoghi with one of those 5 1-year contracts on those
super
DBs.
Cheap.
Let's go to Nate in Fairfax on Grant and Danny. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Hey, how's it going, guys? Appreciate you taking my call. I'm just saying, like, if we took four players in the first and second round last year, and I'll pass on Sennett, although I think he'll be good. We take Jaden, obviously. We take Sanders still, who's going to be great. I believe in Johnny Newton. That's a 75% win rate. That gets us in the top half, right? So if you continue that pace with Peters and company for the next 2, 3, 5 years going forward, we're on pace to be in that company with the Eagles and the Chiefs and all those.
It's a good point. I mean, it's not percentage of picks that you hit on, right? It's the percentage of your starters.
Yeah.
So if you get one starter in each round every year, you're going to be sitting in pretty. But to the topic at hand, and if you're just joining us, we ask people to call in and give their thoughts on the triumvirate of second-round picks that they took. After 1 year, it's too early to grade, but I would say that Sanders still was an A. I would give Newton probably either a B- or a C+. And then I would give Sennett, I hate to give him an F, but
yeah,
like,
how do you grade that?
What do you give a second-round pick that doesn't get on the field?
Yeah, not a very high grade, honestly. I mean, now, it's in pencil. It's not in Sharpie.
Exactly.
Of course, it can be changed.
I mean, I fully believe it'll be a C by the end of the year. I think he's going to help them a bunch this year.
So I don't know that. I hope so. But I don't know. I mean, if Ertz comes back and he's got to be your primary guy, then if that's the case, then what room does he have? He's not the blocking tight end. He's the second receiving tight end. I don't know how much use that's going to be. I don't know. I'm hopeful. So I'll go back to the actual draft. I didn't love their second round. Sanders still made sense to me. And I liked that one at the time, and I'm not just saying it after the fact that it's worked out. I didn't love the Newton pick, and I didn't love the Sennett pick. I got it, but at the same time, I'm kind of going, okay, they passed up guys like Roger Rosengarten, for example, that started right away on the offensive line for a Baltimore team that was really good. They're not, and you could always do this with every team, but sitting there at the time going, man, this would be a great fit long-term. It makes sense.
You didn't like
taking
a D-tackle when you already had the resources allocated Allen and Payne.
That was a big part.
And it turned out that John Allen was hurt for much of the year.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty good thing they had Newton, right? Because he helped them. But I totally get your point. I mean, Sennett was the interesting one just because you would think you could get the weapon on the field. And yes, they signed Ertz, and Ertz stayed healthy, which we didn't think they would.
Yeah.
We thought, well, this guy's going to end up, meaning Sennett, he's going to end up starting 10 games because Ertz is going to be out after week 6. That never happened. But at a position where two guys get to play, you could play three at a time, you just would have taken the over on his targets and catches, right? I mean, even if I told
100%.
You Ertz won't miss a game and they don't really like Bates coming off the field in blocking situations, even still, just...
Yeah, he'll catch 20 balls.
How many routes is he going to run? 60? Okay, then he'll probably catch 8 or 9 passes along the way. It just didn't happen.
No.
He never got looks. It's crazy. Bill's in Pennsylvania listening on the Odyssey app. What's up, buddy?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, I mean, it's hard to look back and say it was a bad second round. We have to see this year. I really think that the Newton surprised me when Cooper DeJean was there. I thought they were going to pick him. I love Sanders still. I think Sennett, not sure just yet what he's doing. And then Luke McCaffrey, the other one I'm just kind of out on. I like McGee, though. I think McGee's going to be good next year.
Yeah, we didn't get to see much, right, because of injury. So I don't know. How confident are you? And this probably isn't fair, just because the expectation for a second rounder. I mean, to me, to have a guy turn into a star is great, right? But that you say that for any round. Like, it's not fair to expect every third-round pick to be Terry McLaurin. Most of them look more like Dyami Brown. But your second-rounders, to me, are, you don't worry about it, bona fide starter, that's your guy, that's kind of the backbone of your team.
First-rounders can become stars. Second-rounders should be really good players. Third-rounders, I think, should be starters. And there maybe the fall-off is after that.
Yeah.
Like, the first three
rounds. And if you get a bonus, it's great.
Yeah, but the first three rounds pretty quickly should be starters that help you a lot, in my opinion.
So, Sanders still, I think we're both in lockstep there.
Giant win.
Already is, right? The thing you're hoping he becomes, well, he did that. Year one and more to come.
And there's a chance he can outperform it, what a second-round pick is. Maybe he becomes a Pro Bowl nickel corner or has an all-pro in the nickel or something. Like, there's a better chance to me he becomes an all-pro nickel corner than that he is 4 years from now, like, a guy that's on another team because they didn't want to give him a second contract.
Let's say Sanders still is kind of the league goose there, the blue chipper. What's your confidence level of those other two guys are the thing that you and I are both, rubber stamp Sanders still. Yeah. What's your confidence level of those other two guys are that also?
I would say I have solid confidence that Johnny Newton becomes a really good player. I don't have confidence in Sinnott right now. Okay. I mean, I don't know how you could, to be completely honest. Again, you couldn't get on the field over old Zach Ertz midway through the season last year. And he was fine. He wasn't doing anything wrong. I like Zach Ertz. But over John Bates a lot of the time. I needed some weapons. I needed some offense. I just drafted you. Top 55.
Yep.
So my confidence has waned there, even though I loved him in the preseason. But Newton, I feel really good about. I think it's hard to just immediately be awesome at that position. And I think he flashed a bunch. Like, he made some really, really good plays.
Certainly some moments, yeah.
I would have thought he made more impact plays based on the college tape. But I still, like, it wasn't a rookie year or anything. But there were a lot of times where you watch him and you go, oh, this dude can play. So I still feel pretty good about him.
So I'm a little less bullish there, but I'm with you on the flashes. They happen. I mean, that's undeniable, right? Like, some of those tackles for loss moments where you went, dude, that looks legit. Now, I wonder how much also is, we might find out later, hey, the scheme doesn't allow for defensive tackles to do anything other than on half the downs, I'm making up a number, to sit there and hold the point of attack so that Bobby Wagner can go make a tackle. Maybe that's the thing. I don't know. But, I mean, he had the same number of sacks as Jalen Holmes. I know he played better than he did, but you're not talking about someone that blew the doors off, like Sanders still did, I would say. So I'm hopeful that he turns into it, same way I am for Sinnott. So if it's a 1 to 10 scale where the Sanders still level is kind of what you're aspiring to, I'd say I'm probably a 6 on Newton and maybe a 3 or 4 on Sinnott.
One of our pet projects on this show is Meteor News. Now, there's a developing situation we need to discuss.
Yeah.
We could do that next. Plus, the Bengals are going to be tagging T. Higgins for a second time in as many years, it looks like. So what would a trade deal start to look like for him if you're Washington? Is that something that would prohibit you from even getting in on Higgins? You're listening to Grant and Danny.